I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. Exactly 10 years ago, the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, was signed. Tehran shipped out tens of thousands of pounds of enriched uranium, dismantled centrifuges, and opened its civil nuclear energy program to international scrutiny. Then came Trump, buoyed by the Israel lobby and neocon hawks, who unilaterally tore up the deal in his first term in 2018. This, the Trump now threatening to double down on genocide Joe Biden's proxy war on Russia through Ukraine. But before war on Russia, it's been war in Iran. The U.S. President and Netanyahu met at the White House to coordinate Palestine genocide after joint U.S. and Israeli unprovoked illegal bombing of Iran. The Islamic Republic itself, which, like the UAE, sent representatives to the BRICS summit in Rio last week to condemn Israel, has now been politically destabilized. Though it is clear from the IAEA that no radioactive particulates were released, indicating any impact on its civil nuclear program, the call within Iran to match Israel's nuclear weaponry is growing. It was arguably not helped by an over-conciliatory interview given by President Masoud Pezeshkian to Trump friend Tucker Carlson. Meanwhile, the US-UK-EU armed genocide in Gaza continues, with Israeli officials advancing forced displacement plans for Gaza's population as genocidal rhetoric dominates Israeli society, with 64% of Jewish Israelis saying there are no innocents in Gaza, according to polling from the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. Joining me from Tel Aviv is Nadav Tamir, senior advisor at the Peres Center for Peace and Innovation and executive director of J Street Israel, the Israeli arm of the liberal Zionist lobbying group that backs Democratic candidates in Washington. Nadav, thanks so much for coming on. It is this anniversary of JCPOA. Over the years, I mean, you've been diplomatic advisor to presidents of Israel. You've been a political officer at the Israeli embassy in Washington. You've been at the foreign affairs ministry. It's been clear in these past 10 years that you've metaphorically wept over the American response, especially by Trump in his first term, to the JCPOA agreement, which was supposed to guarantee the end of perceptions about a nuclear weapons program in Iran. Is it clear now that, I mean, I've got here the Gulf news from UAE, BRICS nations condemn strikes on Iran. The debate in Iran is forget Ayatollah Khomeini's fatwa against nuclear weapons, theologically. Now's the time to get nuclear weapons. We had a former IMF director saying in Rio, the talk is Brazil getting nuclear weapons. Is it the beginning of a new age of nuclear weapons in our region?
Well, we don't know. Nobody could predict the future. I still think that there is a way for a diplomatic agreement. I think the JCPOA at the time was the best alternative to prevent Iran from becoming a nuclear, a military nuclear state. And Trump, also with push from Netanyahu, withdrew, and that what made Iran a threshold nuclear state, at least in terms of the enriched uranium, and also broke the coalition that included China and Russia of the P5 plus one, which is one of the reasons we got to this point. As to the attack, the joint attack, I think that the jury is still out, because it's true that it took the Iranian project, you know, it was hit badly, but it might actually push Iran in terms of its motivation to either break to a bomb, according to the kind of North Korean model, which might, you know, make things much harder. And it will create a situation where countries like Saudi Arabia and Turkey and others will feel that they need a nuclear bomb. So we are in a very dramatic situation.
So you said Netanyahu telling Trump there. I mean, you've been in Washington, at the Israeli embassy in Washington. You worked as a political officer. Can you imagine how that conversation would have gone? Trump elected on a theoretical isolationist foreign policy platform is told by Netanyahu to, after already arguably being defeated, as some say, by the Yemenis in his first war with the Yemenis. By the time this is broadcast, there may be a war with that, and with Yemen and with Iran. How would an Israeli prime minister go around telling Trump, let's bomb Iran?
Well, it is true that Trump came on an isolationist base, but it's not the whole base of Trump. And also in his mind, I think there are two kind of forces. You have the hawks, the neoconservatives, the evangelical Christians, who some of them want Armageddon, some of them just believe in force as the best way to promote interests. And you have the MAGA Republicans, who tend to be more isolationist, and Trump is somewhere in the middle, and he moves back and forth. I think he still wants a deal, but I think Netanyahu was able to convince him that the only way to get a deal is to attack Iran. I'm not sure that was a good calculation, but it remained to be seen.
Come on, you can be more obvious with me. You don't have to say you don't think. What do you think?
No, listen, don't get me wrong. I don't want to be in the Middle East with Iran with nuclear capabilities. I'm talking military capabilities, not civilian.
Yeah, but this is precisely what's going to mean the Iranian population desiring nuclear weapons to enforce deterrent.
So it's not the population, but definitely the regime might decide that if the NPT does not protect them, and if while they are in negotiation with the U.S. there is an attack, maybe they should try to break to a bomb or sneak to a bomb. So,
well, they can do what they like now, because they've abandoned all conciliation with the IAEA, which is the arbiter of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. So it's over, isn't it? And also, Iran now knows it can defeat the so-called Iron Dome in Israel and destroy where you are, Tel Aviv.
No, they did not destroy Tel Aviv. And actually, Iran...
No, I said they can. They can now...
They cannot. They cannot. They could cause damage, but I think that in terms of what happened since this war started, not the last one, is that Iran became completely vulnerable. Their defense against our air force was kind of taking off, and they feel very vulnerable. So it's, you know, I always believe that wars are lose-lose. But it's not that Iran is now winning. Iran lost some of their proxies in Lebanon. Hezbollah is much weaker. They lost their ally Assad in Syria. They feel very vulnerable. On the other hand, this vulnerability might push them to do more on the nuclear side. And that is the challenge. I still believe that an agreement where Iran will have to show where are the 408 kilogram of enriched uranium to more than 60% is. And I still believe that diplomacy is the best way to solve this, but I can't really tell you where is it going.
Yeah, they don't have to show anyone where that missing 400 kilos are, arguably, as far as the Iranians are considered. And I think the whole world will agree with you about how vulnerable Iran must now feel, as you say, with all its alliances with groups that have been so damaged by the Israeli military in recent months. But I don't understand why you don't say that Tel Aviv can be destroyed. They have Fatah 1, 2, Kormander 4 missiles. They take 400 seconds or so to reach Tel Aviv. They have thousands of them. They only fired 100 in June. They fire 1,400 kilo warheads. Even estimates of your Iron Dome trying to take out some of them, it shows, we know from the damage in Tel Aviv and in other places in the recent attacks, Iran, feeling vulnerable, precisely because it feels vulnerable, could annihilate the whole of the city you live in.
They cannot annihilate the city. They could cause damage, but they can't annihilate.
And why do you say that? How do you know that?
Because I think that there is an alliance of countries that want to prevent Iran. We saw it in several cases in the past that they tried to attack Israel, and it was the French and the Brits and even the Jordanians and others who stopped them. So they did cause damage, and I'm not belittling it, and people were in shelters, but still the damage that Israel could still create in Iran, in Tehran, in other cities, is so much bigger. So I do think that Iran prefer an agreement. They also prefer an agreement because of the sanctions, and their economy is suffering. The question
is not suffering
is,
as much as the Israeli economy, is it?
Oh, our economy is much stronger than the Iranians.
And why is that?
No comparison. Why? Because Israel is one of the most creative and innovative societies in the world. We have one of the high tech that is one of the best in the world, and we have trade agreements with the EU and with the Americans and others.
Iran, well, certainly the Americans, because the American public taxpayer, suffering. The American taxpayer is getting a bit fed up, I think. Certainly the MAGA movement of subsidizing it.
No, I'm not talking about military aid. I'm talking about trade, about investment. The Israeli economy is very, very attractive to so many countries in the West. So there is no comparison with the Iranian economy. But I do think that Iran would like to do better in terms of economy, and that's why they want to get
Well, it just joined BRICS. It just joined BRICS, with, like the United Arab Emirates, which are trying to construct a new world out there, of course. Why do you think that Israel, if you don't believe it can be destroyed by Iran with conventional means, I was trying to emphasize on this anniversary of JCPOA, why do you believe that, especially because you worked at the lobby group J Street, that according to Pew research, we now know that across NATO, which arms Israel and lots of economic ties with Israel, according to spring 2025 polling, I don't know whether hatred of Israel is the right phrase, but polling showed that, I'm giving the figures of the numbers of people who don't like your country. Holland, 78%, Spain, 75%, Sweden, 75%, Greece, 72%, Italy, 66%, UK, 61%, Poland, 62%, Germany, 64%, France, 56%, Canada, 64%. They hate your country. Is it the genocide in Gaza plus this attacks on Iran plus Netanyahu plus corruption? And how can Israel ever begin to resolve the hatred all around the world from the majority of humanity for your country?
Because majority of Israelis are not where our government is. Majority of Israelis want this war over a long time ago. Majority of Israelis think that this government
is... No, they hate Israel.
Yeah, but that could change because people don't make those distinctions. But when we will get over this awful war, when we will move this government down and we will have elections, we will have a different government, and you'll see that the support in the world will rise dramatically.
Nadav Tamir, I'll stop you there. More from the executive director of J Street Israel after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Nadav Tamir, senior advisor at the Peres Center for Peace and Innovation and executive director of J Street Israel. Nadav, you were talking about how you didn't believe Iran currently poses cataclysmic threat to Israel, apart from what we don't know about nuclear stuff. What if they attacked Dimona and the Israeli nuclear weapons sites, citing under the UN Charter their ability of self-defense, now that the United States and Israel has attacked Fordown and Natanz and Isfahan? Iran is completely legally allowed to destroy your Dimona nuclear weapons program.
I don't think they can do that. Technically, they just can't. So I think that you're overestimating the abilities of Iran. And I'm not saying a war is good for Israel. And I do agree that the attacks were painful. But Iran is so much more vulnerable. And I don't see why Iran has any interest to attack Israel. I think what they really want is to achieve an agreement with the Americans. They might, this is my concern, decide that alongside the negotiations, they're still trying to promote their nuclear military capabilities. But I don't think Iran has any appetite to go to another round of battle with Israel and the US.
Even though this shifting pattern of alliances that has been occurring since the Ukraine situation in Western Europe, it's status ante, you don't expect any Iranian attacks on Dimona. Okay, well, what about Netanyahu?
You mentioned the BRICS as if it's a very strong alliance. There's, you know, it's really not. And they still cannot compete with Western economies. And there are many countries there that not really getting along with each other, like the Indians and the Chinese. So I wouldn't make too much of this BRICS alliance as a counter to NATO or to Western economic powers.
Okay. I mean, I should say Russia, apparently there were reports they'd offered a mutual defense pact with Iran, and there are reports of Chinese cargo craft in the past few days arriving with military supplies to Iran. And of course, the North-South corridor is crucial to BRICS. Iran very much part of that as the trade route through India. Meanwhile, we have Netanyahu and Trump continually talking about MBS in Saudi Arabia as if Saudi Arabia are going to join the Abraham Accords like the UAE. What's your impression of that? And why do they keep going on about it when MBS has been clear and said what the Israelis are doing in Gaza is genocide?
I think that there is a huge opportunity to normalize Israel relations in the region with Saudi Arabia and other countries. And it might also include some Sunni countries outside the region, like Indonesia and others. What needs to happen is, first of all, end the war in Gaza and start rehabilitate Gaza. And the
Sorry to interrupt you there. What do you mean end the war? You mean the Rafah concentration camp? And somehow countries will have Abraham Accords with Israel. I mean, have been shocked yourself. Were you shocked yourself when you heard that plan to enforce a Nazi style?
Yeah, of course. I think it's disgusting. But I want to stress again that we will end the war. We will get rid of this government. I do believe that the Gazans need to get support from the international community as soon as possible. Their suffering there, the humanitarian suffering, is unbelievable. It's bad for Israel, both morally and strategically, but it's definitely
worse for the Gazans. Isn't it over? The international community has spoken, leaving this appalling Gaza Humanitarian Foundation in charge, and the 2 million are going to die. So when you mean the end of the war, there's going to be mass extermination. That seems to be on the cards. And that's where we then go for what Israel's future is going to be. There is nothing on table.
No. You're very deterministic. I completely disagree with you. I think that Trump, because of his interest, and eventually when Netanyahu will be less dependent on some of the extreme ministers in his government, and he will go to elections, he will go to the majority of Israelis who want the war to end, who want the hostages back home, and who want a political horizon for Israel to normalize its relations in the region. And I believe it can happen. It cannot happen under this government. But this government is not forever. This government, in the worst scenario, will last until October of 26. But I believe that we will get rid of them much, much earlier.
So you don't believe most Jewish Israelis support the extermination of all those in Gaza, blaming them all for the events of October 7th. Children, 64% according to that poll.
I think too many Israelis are under huge trauma because of October 7th, and many of them just cannot make the distinction between Hamas and innocent Gazans. I think it is horrible, but it will change on the dime as soon as there is a political horizon. We were in a trauma after the Yom Kippur War when we were attacked by Syria and Egypt, and most Israelis were very hawkish. But then when there was an opportunity with Sadat and Carter, most Israelis supported with peace with Egypt. And the same will happen here. I do believe that we will, that Israelis, most Israelis, we will always have the base of the Jewish supremacist fascists, that some of them are now in this government, but majority of Israelis are liberals who will support the peace agreement and will support humanity for the Palestinians.
So that poll from the Hebrew University is just a temporary trauma of 64% saying babies can be slaughtered. I mean, I... Uh, I've got to ask,
they didn't say babies could be slaughtered.
There are no innocents. There are no innocents. Yeah. Echoing the Amalek. You know, that kind of genocidal talk. There is some in this region, and you know, every day in the global south, Israel's reputation, it's hard to think of it getting any worse, I suppose. But there is some who believe that actually what is happening is that rather than intervening themselves because of the deterrence of the United States and NATO being the protector of Israel, that they can just wait for Israel to collapse in on itself. There's obviously been mass emigration of Jews from Israel. So many, I mean, the Israeli government has stopped counting the figures. So many, 20,000, hundreds of thousands. We don't know how many people are leaving. You'll be able to tell us. You're in Tel Aviv. And actually, the condemnation from the UAE, from GCC countries and so on, they're watching with horror on our phones the mass killing. And actually, what we're actually watching is the end of Israel.
No, Israel is not going to end. Israel has a very strong civil society that is now under attack because we have an awful government. But we are going to overcome this government. We have one of the most creative and innovative and educated societies. And eventually, the liberals in Israel will take, control in the next election.
But why would anyone go to Israel? I mean, it's known all around the world for genocide. It's compared to the Nazis.
No, I don't know where you're getting your information. Believe me, I'm in touch with most of the foreign diplomats around, and there is a huge admiration for Israeli culture, for Israel society, for the Israeli demonstrations week after week against this government, which my friends in Hungary and Poland are saying, why didn't we have such an active civil society when people try to go after our democracy? So I think you're completely over-exaggerating current trends that are definitely horrible because of what's going on in Gaza.
So I should also ask, if you don't believe the mass emigration of Jews from Israel is a particular threat.
It's not mass.
83,000 Jews last year. I mean, clear that Israel places its military infrastructure in civilian areas, which is why civilians were casualties of the recent attacks from Iran. How prepared is Israel for the onslaught from a, as you admitted, vulnerable Iran, an Iran that feels vulnerable? How prepared is Israeli society for civilian targets to be destroyed as collateral damage in any upcoming war, should Netanyahu, for his own political calculations, seek yet more war as he bombs Yemen, Syria, Lebanon, Iran, and Iraq?
Well, the Jewish people went over many catastrophes in our past, and we will overcome. I think we have much more strength than you understand, and as a society.
And I suppose the United States has always been that protector and benefactor. As I said, you worked in the Israeli embassy in Washington. Trump is trying to make noises against the primary victor of New York City. Of New York, Mamdani, Zoran Mamdani. Clearly, he is against the genocide of Israel, a big Jewish town, New York. Isn't that just emblematic again of the point of the end of Israel, that the United States, most people in the United States have an unfavorable view of Israel, most people in the United States, and of course, in big cities like New York, the elites of the United States, let alone across the First World, let alone the Global South, they've had enough.
No, I think majority of Americans support Israel's right to exist and protect itself against terror. Majority of Americans want the special relations between the U.S. and Israel. Majority of Americans also believe that Netanyahu is taking Israel to a very bad direction. But this is going to change, as I told you, when we get rid of Netanyahu.
I mean, obviously, former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert said Israel's on the verge of civil war. Do you think Israel is committing a genocide?
No, I think Israel is committing not Israel. Some in Israel are committing war crimes. I don't think it's a genocide, because genocide is a legal term, but where you're trying to exterminate another people, I don't think that's the intention of the military in his campaign. But I do think that there are awful things that are happening there, and I think that it should be stopped. I hope that Trump, that has a huge leverage over Netanyahu because he's so admired by the right wing in Israel, will be the one to stop it.
Clearly, when you were a policy advisor in the Israeli government at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, was when Hamas was being supported by the Israelis. There are reports that Hamas has never been stronger in Gaza in its history during this genocide. So is there a news blackout in Israel about the impact of continuing Hamas retaliation against Israeli occupation forces? Because there are lots of stuff on X about that isn't being reported on Israeli television and on NATO propaganda media about the fact that Israeli soldiers are dying every day.
Listen, I get my information not only from the Israeli media. I think that the information that you get is very twisted. It is true. Too many soldiers are getting killed, and it's very sad.
Your own child is in the army?
Hamas, yes. But Hamas is in a very tough situation. I do believe that eventually we cannot just eliminate them. We need a diplomatic solution to create an alternative to Hamas. But the war is awful, but we are much more powerful than Hamas. No comparison.
Nadav Tamir, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by the UK-US-EU armed genocide in Gaza. We'll be back on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.